Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. He made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of this.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Tony is our resident hip-hop head. All the guys I like in hip-hop are 40 and 50 and now 60 years old. Chuck D just turned 60.
Woo.
Eminem dropped an album yesterday, a surprise album out of nowhere. And I'm curious, Tony, because I don't know that there's a more polarizing rapper than Eminem in the history of the genre, given that the white guy makes an appearance and he gets celebrated for being great because he has been great. And a lot of people, though, are just right now doing the has been in great. They don't like what he's doing right now. It's hard in that particular game to age well. I know 2 Chainz has found a place late in life, but that game is hard. So how was the Eminem album that dropped last night? I'm not qualified because I do like Eminem, but there are people who know a lot more about hip hop than I do who say, slow down with that. There are a lot of rappers who are good. And then they do what Isaiah Thomas and Dennis Rodman did to Larry Bird, where they're like, he would be just another guy if he was black. Part of his popularity is his novelty, but he's done some great work, like indisputably great work.
No, absolutely. And I think there is a little bit of novelty to the fact that Eminem is a master lyricist being white in not a white man's game, right? Like there is a little bit of Larry Bird novelty to it. I haven't heard the album yet. I'm going to kick some tires on it today. But the last couple of projects that he's done haven't been received well, just because it seems like he's past his prime in that aspect. Guys like 2 Chainz, guys like Rick Ross, guys that are still at the top of their games later into their 40s have really found a really good niche with the new trap movement. And Eminem was never part of that, right? Like he was always kind of on his own, either freestyling or doing stuff at a more lyrical level. And right now, I think the game has passed him by in that setting where the genre has just changed so much, especially with the young guys coming up, where everything is trap. Everything has just a different style to them what he was, you know, coming up with. So I haven't heard it yet, but I did hear Kid Cudi's Man on the Moon 3 and didn't really like it.
I find interesting how hard it is to not get lame as you age in that genre, because I have no connection points as I've gotten older to the younger guys. It's not for me, and it doesn't make me right. It makes me wrong because I have aged, and the thing that is popular now, young people are the ones who are allowed to make it popular. So please tell me when you have listened to it, because I'd be curious what your thoughts are. Chris, I want to ask you a couple of questions here as it relates to Belichick against Tua. 8 seasons him playing against him coaching, Belichick coaching against a rookie quarterback, the rookie quarterback playing his first game against Bill Belichick. Those games, there have been 11 of them. You want to guess Bill Belichick's record in the 11 games?
I think he's probably 9-2.
He is 11-0 in those games. The touchdown to interception ratio of rookie quarterbacks is 7 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. The completion percentage of rookie quarterbacks playing against Belichick for the first time, you saw Herbert look incompetent. You saw him look incompetent, and you saw what he looked like last night. Those are not the same player. Belichick clearly can confuse rookie quarterbacks. The completion percentage is barely 50%. It's 50.7. And this is the one that jarred me just as much, Stugatz, as 0-11. 162 yards is the average passing yards of a rookie quarterback playing against the Belichick defense. This Belichick defense it's been eviscerated by COVID. It has not been the defense it was last year. The Patriots have suffered more than any team in the league when it came to opt-outs.
Headed into the game against the Patriots, Herbert had 316 yards, 368 yards, a bunch of touchdowns, and then he got to New England and had 206 yards and had two interceptions. And then last night it's 314 yards and two touchdowns. So Belichick does have the ability to do this to rookie quarterbacks.
And Herbert did that last night without the skill guys you're used to him doing it with.
Not to discredit his greatness, but rookie quarterbacks tend to play for bad teams, and Bill Belichick has tended to have really good teams. So this is the first time that it's mostly a fair fight between Bill Belichick and a rookie quarterback.
It's funny that you say that, though, Mike, because I think the Chargers are actually a good team that has lost a bunch of one-score games and has been hurt the last 3 weeks before last night by sort of apocalyptic situations involving their coach. But I don't think that the Chargers are lose 45-0 with that quarterback. I haven't seen anyone else do that to Herbert where I'm watching and I'm like, why is he throwing it there? It's like he doesn't know what he's doing. I haven't seen that. And I can't explain to you, although Orlovsky is pretty good at doing it, I can't explain to you how it is that he's always able to do that.
I mean, Mike, all of their losses, with the one exception, that one exception to the Patriots, 45-0, they've been very, very close games against good teams,
too. The Dolphins-Chargers game wasn't close. I mean, the Dolphins pretty thoroughly dismantled them.
I mean, it turned out to be an eight-point game, but you're right. You're right.
Belichick's got to take away, or at least attempt to, like his game plan has to be to take away the middle of the field and the tight ends. Like that's, I mean, I'm Chris Cody, and that's what I would do if I was defending Tua. So
take
that must
Gesicki
be
away.
What his strategy is going to be.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
That's right.
I wanted to tell the audience about this because I am not a football expert. I am not any kind of person who just has opinions that should merit your attention any more than average person who's watching games. I do study some numbers, but I don't fancy myself a talent evaluator in any way in that sport. And I've told you many different times that I don't know how to do the measurements in that sport more than any other sport on how somebody becomes great. But the thing that I wanted to ask you is I mocked yesterday the idea of Mike Greenberg saying that the Washington football team will, A, be a really tough out in this year's playoffs, and B, their Super Bowl window starts opening next season. I mocked it, and then Dominique Foxworth said it, and then Mina Kimes shared the opinion. And I keep looking at it, and I'm like, how are you guys arriving at that when you don't know what their quarterback play is going to be? And the way Dominique is arriving at it is they've got three or four great players who are value. They are players, and that's what you need in a salary cap sport. You need great guys who are cheap. Seattle Seahawks went from, you know, dynastic type of team to not that when they had to pay Russell Wilson, and all of a sudden at that position they weren't getting value. They were getting greatness, but not value.
So they have Chase Young, they have McLaurin, they have a running back who's cheap. I mean, yeah, they have some valuable players who are still on rookie deals.
But
you know?
Explain it to me, because I don't know. I'm not at the place yet. The reason I'm asking you to explain this to me is because this would be how it is that a game passes someone like me by. Because I'm watching Washington. I'm pretty thoroughly unimpressed by Washington, even though they win an occasional game, and it's obvious how good Chase Young is. We all knew going into the season how good he'd be. They've got some financial flexibility, and they also have draft picks. But how can you assume that a team's Super Bowl window is opening when they don't have a quarterback? I am not that advanced in being able to understand how this stuff works in terms of evaluation, that I'd be willing to put anybody in a Super Bowl conversation when I'm watching Mahomes over here getting to the Super Bowl, and I don't even know who's going to play quarterback for you.
I think the way they would probably tell you that they're doing it is they have a good base of talent. They have good players that are underpaid at good positions. And a guy like Matt Ryan could be a free agent. There are some guys, quarterbacks, they can go out and get during the offseason.
Do you know, and please clear your throat in a way that makes, oh, God.
Thanks. Well, now it's good for the rest of the day.
Okay, I mean, that sounded like it was good for the rest of the day.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Wasn't that bad.
Thank you.
72 hours removed from you going to a doctor and saying you got it all cleared up.
I did.
It has gotten worse since.
Well, it's gotten colder. I mean, you know what that does to the throat.
That's whistling weather, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, usually. Pretty good whistling, Dad.
Night is darkest before the dawn, Dan.
Yep, let me see. Hold on, whistle. Yeah, a little too cold. Let's try it again, maybe 15 minutes and 5 degrees warmer.
Okay, we'll work on that for you. No problem.
Yeah, a little too chilly still.
Does anyone out there laugh? How do you guys feel about what it is that I'm talking about? When I say Washington and Super Bowl window, and the Super Bowl team I'm looking at has Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and I'm looking at Logan Thomas, and I'm looking at McLaren, and I'm looking at no quarterback situation.
I think the other thing maybe they're doing and perhaps discounting, and certainly they know more about football than I do, okay, is that Washington has benefited from playing inside that division the entire year. They have games against Philadelphia, the Giants, and the Cowboys, and none of those teams are any good. None of them.
But would we be talking about this if Dak Prescott had just stayed healthy? Would this even be any kind of conversation? You could say, I'm not ready to say that Washington's about to be in that division what the Patriots have been in the AFC East when I don't see a quarterback. Where is the quarterback? You can, Matt Ryan. I don't know about Matt Ryan because I know Matt Ryan was close to an MVP when he had Shanahan as his offensive coordinator, when he had Mack as his center, when he had a Super Bowl offense of Julio Jones being totally healthy. But I also see what Matt Ryan looks like every time Julio Jones leaves the lineup. And just like A.J. Green propped up Dalton for about 5 seasons as a starter, I feel like Julio Jones has totally inflated what Matt Ryan actually is. And I feel that way because when I saw him throwing to Sanu, all of a sudden the whole thing felt a lot different when it came to Matt Ryan. Do you trust Matt Ryan? Do you have a lot of feeling that Matt Ryan at this age is a great deal better than Alex Smith? And this is not to sell you on Alex Smith because I have simply not seen from Matt Ryan. I will tell you that he is better than Alex Smith, but better enough to be Super Bowl contender good because you feel like Washington's other pieces are so strong?
I don't know. It's the other pieces that I'm not certain about, just how strong they are. I think Matt Ryan in the right situation is a quarterback that can win a Super Bowl. He was a half away from doing it a couple of years ago. So I do think
a lot of things change to unmask Matt Ryan there because it's not – it's not the same guy, Stugatz. You were talking about MVP of the league, and I think at this point, for whatever little we think like we know about football and how complicated it is, I do believe that all of us understand, oh, okay, Shanahan does know a little something. Now, he may have erred by betting on his ego and saying, I'll give Garoppolo money because I could do this for anybody. And I'd be curious, actually, if I'm Matt Ryan, which do you think, Stugatz? You're Matt Ryan. Which one do you think you're choosing if you become available this offseason, Washington or San Francisco?
Oh, I choose San Francisco. I would. I mean, those guys, if they all come back healthy, the guys in the defense, the running backs, a team that was a half away from a quarter away from winning the Super Bowl just a year ago with that coach, I go there.
I like Ron Rivera. I like Ron Rivera's story. I view Ron Rivera in today's modern offensive game as feeling a little primitive because I hold against him how the Cam Newton offense worked and how not space age that looked.
Well, Bill Belichick's making it look a hell of a lot better, let me tell you.
Nobody is making that look very good
I think maybe we should reflect back on the Ron Rivera, Cam Newton discussion of a couple of years ago. He's just not the same guy, and that's okay. I mean, he took a lot of hits. It's okay.
But Ron Rivera, do you think of him the way that you think of Shanahan? Because a lot of people are celebrating 6-7.
Don't you dare say that.
No, they got a good defense. They got draft capital. They're a tough team, but I'm not going to – well, we fell for it, right? This became a national conversation because Get Up, right? Because they beat a bad Cowboy team, a Steelers team that was really beat up, and a Niners team that was even more beat up. I'm not really falling for it.
But what is happening there? I'm surprised by the people lending. I was laughing at Greenberg, but it got my attention when Dominique, who works in Washington, and Lord knows I have been inundated over the years because Highly Questionable is filmed out of Washington. I've been inundated with Washington homerism forever. But the thing that was startling to me about hearing Dominique and Mina endorse this position was, are you guys forgetting 20 years of mismanagement with that franchise? Like, are you guys forgetting? Do you think Ron Rivera fixes all the Daniel Snyder stuff?
Well, Ron Rivera and Jason Wright, when you have the owner admitting that we need to seriously change this culture, then you're far more inclined to actually say, well, Snyder's not going to Snyder at this point. I think that's what's actually happening. People's faith in Ron Rivera to be an adult in the room. And they've given Ron Rivera far more power than he actually deserves, given his reputation, even though he's given us his resume. And it's impressive. Well, and Jason Wright is changing things over there, too.
But, Mike, don't you think this is it? In terms of their analysis, don't you think it's Antonio Gibson, young running back on a rookie contract who's proven to be very, very
Scary
good.
Scary Terry is a good weapon.
It, only in his second year, still on a rookie contract.
The Logan Thomas project's gone Thomas. Very well for them. Okay. And they have a good defense.
Yeah. So you don't need Aaron Rodgers to perhaps win there.
No,
you just need a
Matt
quarterback.
Ryan. Matt Ryan can certainly make them a strong division contender. And I do think that
in a bad division, too.
Maybe. Dak Prescott's the best quarterback in that division, so I would just default that the Cowboys would probably win. But what we saw from the Cowboys this year wasn't impressive with Dak Prescott. They just put up a lot of points. They weren't as anemic as they are now. I don't think Dak Prescott's getting a 40-burger hung up on him by the Washington football team on Thanksgiving.
I want to ask you guys this because I'm curious. It's been a long time since any of you were in the studio, and I don't know if this particular home was there when you guys would drive out of the studio. So, Stugat, you may see this depending on the way you go home. Mike, I'm assuming you've seen this at least a couple of times. We have, close to the studio, a couple of islands where Miami Beach's money resides, and it is a lot of money. It is where Pfizer, where Viagra ends up getting accidentally made. Somebody's trying to experiment with heart medication, and then all of a sudden you have boner pills, and now a home pops up on Star Island where a lot of money is being spent. But have you seen when you leave here, Stugatz, that there is behind one of these giant, expensive, on-the-water homes, there is a boat that is a square home, that is a two-story home. It is totally square.
Haven't noticed it.
And it is from top to bottom. It's very obvious as you drive out of here. Let me explain this home to the people listening. I've never seen anything like it. So it's a boat. It's on the water. It's docked behind a house. Have you guys seen this? It is square and two stories, and it feels like, I think, I'm pretty sure, I'm driving by at a high rate of speed, that the glass basically makes it so you can see into the entirety of the house. It's roof to floor glass. You can see that there is a floating square home that I feel like the moment that you let it loose from the dock is going to sink into the sea because of its weight, because it looks like a home.
No, I've pulled up next to it out by Marine Stadium. I've driven past it. That thing appeared off of Star Island for the first time by the Super Bowl, and I've actually seen it out. It's like a party rental thing, and you just see like lots of people. They have service out there, but it's usually docked in front of that house, so I'm not sure if that
it's
house
a four-bedroom and four-bathroom home, and it's a bit of a floating mansion. It's pretty big.
It's very sturdy because like within it, it has like these two anchors that go straight down. It's just steel pillars, and it like elevates, so it's actually pretty gnarly out in the open sea.
And the really cool thing is it's very modern, right? It's like a luxe modern apartment that you would find somewhere in Brickell or somewhere on the beach, but it's a floating barge. And it did come up like during the Super Bowl. It's incredible.
What would you guys pay for it? Because I read that it's for sale. What do you think that is worth? Because I looked at it and I'm like, that can't go out on the open sea. I feel like that's going to capsize, even though I'm just looking at it and saying I've never seen a yacht that looks like that. It is built to function as a yacht, but it does not look like something that can function as a yacht. It looks like something.
Sounds that, confusing and dangerous. I mean,
I just, it bobbing in 6-foot seas to me would look strange.
It's a pretty impressive barge that it rests on. You don't really gather that when you're far away, but someone that pulled up next to it and did a couple of rounds, because I'm like, wow, this is amazing. This is the future the Jetsons told me about. I don't think that thing obviously makes it from point A to point B. It's a pretty impressive thing, but also I'm not sending it to the North Atlantic.
All right, but it's a barge that you have no concern about it capsizing, floating away, any of that stuff, because I want to answer Dan's question in terms of how much I would pay for it. Is it something that you can maybe put in the backyard and the dock to your house and have like a little party house out by
big,
the back?
It's as big as a Clevelander. It's as big as this hotel, like from our studio.
Wow, that big.
To the end of the
It's a mansion. It's a floating mansion. And I know it sounds, you know, whatever it is, 4 bedrooms, 4.5 bath, like it's not that much. But it's it's 2 stories. And when you drive by it, it is giant. And my question is, what do you imagine that is worth? It looks like no boat that you have ever seen. And it looks like something that is so unique and original that people might want it because it's unique or original, and people might not want it because it's too strange.
I mean, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of, I don't know, $300,000-$500,000, maybe $600,000.
No shot. You are way off, Stu. What? It's a $4 million place. At least.
What?
No. I looked it up. Do you want the actual number or you want to keep guessing?
No, go ahead. You can tell us, but have you seen it, Billy?
I just wondered where they drive it from. Because it looks like a house, so where's the captain's like steering wheel or whatever it is that a boat has?
Do you drive a boat? I know we've had this conversation before.
You captain a boat.
Wow.
Stu, is that house a boat or a ship?
I have no idea.
I think that's a ship. Thank you, Billy, for...
You man a ship, I think.
Yes, that's true.
In 2020? You sure you don't woman a ship? What is that?
I think you person a ship.
You person a ship. Better.
Billy, would
you're batting down the hatches? I know that.
Thank you, Billy. It's also useless. Would you want that boat?
Oh no, are you crazy? I mean, if someone handed it to me and I could sell it, sure.
Would you even go?
You think Billy would sleep in that thing?
Would you even go out on that boat? Would it have to be like a paddleboard in terms of what it is that the seas were like for you to be?
How far am I going? Biscayne Bay is like 4 feet deep or something, so but that's not super scary.
Do you need a perfect day on the water to even have a chance of falling asleep in that thing?
I don't think I'd be sleeping much, but that's not something you take out into the sea. That's something you keep like in the bay, and then you just kind of put the little things down onto the ground, or you dock it at a house. It's not going out into the ocean, that thing.
Is there any particular reason, Stugat? And again, if it functions like a yacht, I'm assuming it is going out into the ocean. It is beautiful. Is there any particular reason that the thing that you're having Billy do on this ship is sleeping?
Yeah, Billy can't sleep unless it's the exact right situations. He's a nervous wreck. And I just think Billy, in the middle of the ocean, in a house that he's not certain whether or not it's going to collapse, doesn't have confidence, doesn't know if a wave can take him out at any moment. I can't imagine him being at all comfortable at any moment spending any amount of time in that house, let alone sleeping. That's all I'm saying. That's it. Is that fair, Billy?
I mean, would I live in that house on the water? Probably not. No, I don't think I would. But, you know, I like cruises. I like the water. I like the ocean. I just, you know, need to be a little safer than that. The thing does look a little...
Your foundation.
A little flimsy. Let's just say this. That's no Titanic, and they didn't think that was going to happen to the Titanic. You know what I mean?
Right. Chris, you have been very helpful here.
You see what that thing just did? You can like...
That was crazy.
Apparently, it can like go on land, and it has like stakes, and it can rise up. Wow.
Yeah.
Chris, you just showed us, and I hope that we turn this into video so people can have a complimentary social experience with what it is that we're talking about, where they don't have to look this up for themselves. But you've been holding up to your Zoom camera the entire time a look inside of this home, and it's beautiful. There is no question that for $5.5 million, even though that's a steep price, that is a home that I would imagine would attract buyers because of how unique it is. What did you think of what you were watching there, Chris, as you showed us what the inside of that place looks like?
It seems like something you would have.
It's the reason I'm asking.
because I bought it. That's it's our new
part
studio.
Part of the new negotiation.
That's the new studio.
I was trying to, I thought James, I was looking for James Harden.
That would have been a way to announce that that was our new studio.
Man, I would have.
We just did.
So we're going to start the national show with something. We have been so busy, so occupied around here. I know many of you are worried about what's going to happen with us beginning January 5th. So if you're listening to this right now, just know that we have a plan in place, but it's going to take a second for all of us to find our footing because we are really under it in terms of change and work. And so we've been able to do precious little, Stugatz, in the way of bits. I have missed them. The best part of this job for me personally, beyond laughing with my friends and family, is being able to do stuff creatively that makes us laugh. And if you've noticed the radio show recently, we've just been able to do very little of that in a way that is not fun for me, because that's the playground. That is the place where everything here gets birthed and is enjoyable for us and then becomes contagious for you. And I just can't remember, with all of the work we're putting around here into what it is that we're doing, the last time we did any kind of just bit, something that was produced and a bit, as opposed to farting out all the content we're farting out every day without a planning and a structure to let's work on something and see if in a few hours we can make 2 or 3 minutes of radio.
I've missed it as well. It's been a bit challenging times, not just for the show, but for everyone. So we haven't had the full cast here, the full complement of people here. It's just everything's been made trickier. I'm certain we'll get back to it. Bits are a big part of our show, and we all know that you love them, and we all love doing them. And I suspect we will get back to them once we get back to some sense of normalcy.
Well, I'm not sure. We're going to play something at the top of the national show here. But when you say we all enjoy them, I'm not totally sure. I walked into the studio several times yesterday because I kept forgetting things, glasses, my wallet, and a bunch of things. And you were working on this bit, and I heard you working on this bit, and it didn't seem like a lot of fun for either you or Mike. It seemed to be a bit of a labor, a bit of a struggle. It seems like you guys were very close to fighting.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but that's because your fat ass kept walking in and out of the studio.
So, Mike,
please take that the way it was intended. I love you. The ass isn't even really that fat, but it felt like I needed to say it right then and there.
My wife says that I've got a 6-year-old's ass. So, of the things that are fat,
I have so many questions.
I feel bad saying that.
I don't want the answers to.
Yes. I mean, you just kept walking in and out. I didn't need to point out your fat ass.
I just haven't had access to my glutes in many years when I'm doing squats and stuff because I'm not properly connected after a bicycle accident. We can get into all of that in the
now
spirit of
terrible.
TMI. You shouldn't feel terrible. It's simply like, I will, if you would like, I will pull down my pants in here and show you my bare ass and have you make an assessment about whether or not my ass is actually fat. You can call me fat. I just don't believe that my ass is fat.
I would like that, actually.
There's no way it's not hairy.
You guys want to do that? Do you want what's hard? Do you guys want to do this at the end of this segment? Do you want to do this? We can send it out to the audience. It'll be a big reveal. Not
what,
that
your
big.
Ass?
Yes.
You're pulling down your pants.
I'm going to show my ass.
Chain
yes.
Five.
I
I'll
prefer
make an ass. We were going for a joke. We're both clear.
Go ahead.
Oh God! Now I'm just rattled. I'll assess your ass.
We're gonna air all of that just as it is. We're not gonna edit any of it.
I'd prefer seeing Tony's ass.
I mean, Tony's been busy celebrating.
Tony is so happy that Chris Yours is a failure.
It's been about a month and a half since our most recent classic radio bit. We had the messe that was a little prior to that, and obviously the Sueys are just a massive project, but Brockmeyer did some play-by-play for the Patriot League, and we only played that once.
Play that again here because of how much so I love good. That. It was just hidden in the shadows, and so many of you missed it, but thank you for doing this because I wanted to play this more. Brockmeyer took a gig that was very in need of money, and it was something to counter what the NBA was doing with its social messaging, a league meant for customers who wanted something different from their basketball, a barnstorming tour of Patriot League basketball players who wanted to sell a different message, sort of the XFL of political and social commentary. So we talked to Brockmire about it, and he played a clip for us, late night television show style, where he comes in, sits next to us, and says, "You guys got a clip? I've got a clip. I've got a clip that I can tell you about."
Yeah, and the players, much like the NBA in the bubble, had their own personalized messages, and Brockmire was new to the league, so that's how we referred to the players as.
This was this is the kind of stuff, Stugatz, that I want to be doing so much more of on January 5th, when we can have more freedom to do all the things that we want to do, that you guys love, that is a little more organized than some of the stuff. We have been sprinting here because of everything that's happened. Just so that you know, if the show feels to you in some ways like it's not what it used to be, it's not just pandemic. One of the things that's happened is because they took an hour away from us on national radio, because they made the switch to ESPN Plus, because there were changes, we have simply been sprinting to try and keep the content up, even though I have to get out of here immediately after the radio show to tape Highly Questionable, and there's not a lot of time to do some of this stuff. It's why we've been coming in way too early, unsustainable for Stugatz. He's here too early in the morning to try and get this stuff out. I want more of this when our future unfolds in front of you, and on January 5th, the part that I'm excited about in terms of what it is that we're creating for you that will take time to create is the fact that you are going to go on this journey with us through free agency, because we do not have a deal in place. We are going to be like that floating house. We are going to be untethered from land and just sort of floating around.
Can you play the f***ing clip?
Hello, fans. Welcome to the start of the second quarter with the Amarillo Freedoms leading the Little Rock Stars and Stripes 14-10. Blue Lives Matter dribbles the ball up court, throws a crisp bounce pass to Arm the Teachers. He quickly hands it off to Stop Persecuting White Men. Smothering defense played there by Climate Change is a Chinese hoax. And Abortion is Murder dishes the ball off to George Soros created AIDS, who shoots and he misses. Ball rebounded by It's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, you moron, who throws a long pass to Taxes or Confiscation, who immediately kicks it out to Public Schools Turn My Child Gay, who lays it in for 2 points. Nifty move there. Public Schools Turn My Child Gay was recently inserted into the starting lineup instead of Jesus Owned a Glock. The move has definitely paid off for the team. Oh, ball stripped clean by I Believe QAnon, who goes for the dunk, and he's rejected. He is rejected right by the rim, and oh, he appears to be hurt. Oh, he's grabbing his back. Coach Carlson going to sub in, I believe that's Bring Back the Gold Standard. And yeah, that's the Clintons killed Michael Jackson. That's right, folks, they're going small. And the Freedoms have answered back by sending in a whole new five led by the UN wants to steal my Bible, NATO is a pedophile ring, and the Earth is 6,000 years old. And immediately this unit is full court pressing. Oh my, Antifa gave me colon cancer. And Ted Cruz, please, please sleep with my wife, are double teaming the devil who uses the metric system. And they steal the ball. They throw it to Sesame Street as a Jewish conspiracy to make our kids join ISIS, who blows the layup. Tom miss with a scrappy two guard who is comforted by his teammates. I believe in the death penalty for minors and the learning disabled, and believe what I believe because otherwise I get confused and then I get angry. Oh, you gotta love that team spirit.
Billy, you did not smile once during that. Like, what's going on with you? Do you not like that? Did you think it was not good? I was looking at all the faces in the Zoom, and Tony and Chris and Roy are roaring with laughter. And could you not hear it, or did you not think it was funny?
No, it was fine. I had to, you know, coordinate some Zoom links later for celebrity prognosticators.
Yeah, this is where we are
via Zoom.
This is exciting
time. A friend of the show.
Listen, I know Billy's sense of humor. There's no way he listens to that and does not laugh. It is laugh out loud funny. It's perhaps one of the best bits that's ever been done on the show.
Okay.
And degree of difficulty is like through the roof.
Yes.
Man.
Mike, robot baseball does not hold up. Correct. The original play-by-play that.
I
oh, look
not.
At the smile on Roy's face.
I will. Not.
Look at how happy Roy is. Roy,
no.
Roy, it makes us all happy. I know it's bad,
follow.
And it still makes me happy.
You cannot follow one of the best things we've ever done with one of the worst.
But that's what we do around here. And Stugatz will say at every turn that that is the best bit that we've ever done and then apologize for calling me a fat ass. This segment ends with me mooning you guys. Does it not?
It better.
Oh.
Do it.
Roy, what do you think about robot baseball? Mike is uncomfortable. I like to sink in the stuff that's bad, that doesn't work. Your thoughts are what? You did not smile as much during the Brockmeyer play-by-play as you did. This was one of the original bits we did, Mike. This is, I can't remember doing a bit before this
one. You're padding my argument right now.
Yeah, but at the time, it was great. It does not hold up. I'm perfectly fine playing it because it makes me happy every single time I hear it.
Let's reduce the expectations here because it was one of...
It was a part two.
Yes, there was a part two because it was very popular at the time, but comedy sometimes doesn't hold up. Roy, just give us your general thoughts because you are beaming. You are radiant right now thinking about robot baseball.
Oh, clearly it doesn't hold up. Okay. But it's nostalgia. That's what it is.
It takes you back to a better time, right? An easier time.
Mike
right?
is making a sour face. He's embarrassed by this.
This thing is 8 minutes long.
Okay, well, we won't play all of it. Look at Billy. Billy's like,
we might miss the ending if we don't play 8 minutes.
Inefficient.
I want the sequel. Yeah, let's do both.
I've never heard it before.
All right, let's see how this goes over. There's so much of the audience. This is another thing I'm looking forward to doing. Going back into the Wayback File with all of our stuff and just doing nostalgia no matter how bad it is, no matter how little it holds up.
I've heard you guys reference it a ton, but I don't know if I've heard it either, but I can just bet that it's Hawk sounding like a robot.
Okay, well, here's what we've got, because it doesn't sound like you have heard it. This is the premise. We were talking about umpires becoming robots in baseball, and then we said, what would it be like if all of the players were robots? So, with the preface of we don't think this still works, we worked on it a long time ago. Mike, quit. Will you, Mike? Will your fat ass just play the clip?
And we welcome you back to the Death Star here at Microsoft's Wrigley Field. Book shall be back for another great season of baseball. Obviously, the big question as we enter this year is, can anyone break Frankenberry's record of 326 home runs last season? As always, I welcome back my partner in the booth, R2-D2. And R2, how about the robot from Lost in Space last season? 9,027 RBI. 9,027 robots batted in. So set to go on the mound for the Mets today. The Coke machine. The big guy's been throwing the ball extremely well. A steady diet of Cokes. He'll mix in the occasional Sprite to keep the batters off balance. And then just when he feels like they're getting locked in on him, he'll mix in the occasional Tab. Got an excellent, excellent defense behind him. Kit from Knight Rider out there patrolling center field. He can downshift, cover a lot of ground. Well, up first for the Astros, it will be the $6 million man as Austin digs in on the right side. Bigger, better, stronger, faster, but still a crappy on-base percentage. Coke machine looks in, has the sign. Puts 75 cents in himself, pushes the button, and the pitch. And that ball's outside. It's 1-0 to the $6 million man. A season ago, Steve Austin, a tremendous year. He was second in the league to Frankenberry with 300 home runs, 26 behind the league leader. Coke machine ready to work, and here's the 1-0. The $6 million man swings and hits a ground ball into the hole at short. C-3PO to his right. Backhand stab, nice play. Throw on to first, the stretch by the Terminator, and they got him. Nice play by C-3PO. He's not only gold, he's a gold glover. And we're expecting a lot out of C-3PO this season, R2. He spent half the year last year on the DL due to rust, and you know what that's like, don't you, buddy? Darth Vader doesn't like the call, and he's coming out of the dugout. He's going to go over there and argue with Cowboy Joe West. R2, I'll tell you what, it's a scary sight anytime you see Darth Vader with the lightsaber out. And here he goes, approaching Joe West. Oh, and Darth Vader has sliced first base umpire Joe West in half. Well, that'll set the umpiring crew straight. Nonetheless, the $6 million man is out. And up next for the Astros, it'll be Iona from Richie Rich. So Iona digs in left side. She's a switch hitter, if you know what I mean. And the first pitch on the way from the Coke machine. That one in there for a knee-high strike. And it's nothing in one. Coke machine usually works with a pretty steady pace. He's got the quarters ready, puts them in himself, pushes the button, and a Sprite on the way. Iona with a swing. That one drilled deep. Right field. Optimus Prime going back, turning, looking, gone! Iona has left the lot, and the Astros are on the board. They lead it 1-0. Iona circling the bases, taking her time as she pimps out her trot, and this could end up sparking some trouble between these two teams. Boog Shabby, R2-D2, back here at Microsoft's Wrigley Field as we go to the last of the fourth, and the Mets lead this game 4-1. Mets up to hit as they'll face the crafty veteran, the Shasta machine, on the hill. Mets got the lead in the third. Inspector Gadget with a grand slam. R2, interesting play as Gadget, speeding around the bases with the aid of his helicopter hat, got to third. Rosie's waiting there with the baseball. Gadget flashes her, and he's able to score as she collapsed from shock. Now, one of the things interesting, that play originally ruled a triple and an error. As Shasta looks in for the side, has it, puts a dime in himself, Terminator waiting, and the pitch. And that's right there for a strike, and it's nothing and one to the Terminator. Now back to that play, R2. You actually went down and talked to our official scorer, Joshua, from the movie War Games, and he was, shall we say, unhappy with your inquiry and the change of scoring. Originally a triple and an error, then shifted to a grand slam. I'm with you, thought it was a triple, and then the error. But you made your inquiry, and Joshua got a little testy, didn't he? After you made the inquiry, he said, how about a game of global thermonuclear war? And there's a ball outside of the Terminator. Count even up 1-1. The Shasta machine featuring a variety of pitches, mainly off speed, the cream soda, the black cherry, and of course, even when you know it's coming, so difficult to hit the Fresca. The money in the machine and the pitch. And Terminator swings and pops him up. And back of first, there's RoboCop going back, and he's going to call off the mechanical giant evil spider thing from Wild Wild West, steps around the torso of Joe West, and he dropped it. He dropped the ball, and Terminator cruises into second. It's a two-base error on RoboCop. Oh, R2, we've seen it 1,000 times. Some shaky defense from RoboCop.
Back off, or there will be trouble.
So bad. So bad.
And now RoboCop has just shot the torso of Joe West. R2, that is just flat-out frustration. That's all it is. So Shasta on the hill, and he'll stare in at the next hitter, the speedster Kit.
Night Rider, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of a man who does not exist.
Kit with his fancy computer crowding that plate, and the first offering from Shasta. Look out, almost hit him. Oh, R2, some bumper music at Kit, and Shasta clearly not playing around. So 1-0 to Kit as the Mets lead 4-1. Terminator out there at second. In the outfield left to right, the crappy murderous robots of iRobot. Tell you what, R2, Will Smith really should be proud of that fine piece of work, huh? And the next offering from the crafty Southpaw Shasta machine. Oh, he hit him. He hit him in the windshield, cracked the windshield. I tell you what, that is absolutely going to run more than the $500 deductible for Kit as he will take his base. Two on, nobody out. And here comes C-3PO up to the dish. And R2, you love this song, don't you? Mets on top 4-1, and C-3PO climbs in right side. On the left side of the infield for the Astros, Tron backed up at short. Johnny Five the same over there at third. Two on, nobody out, and Shasta's first offering to C-3PO misses down and away for ball one. C-3PO already with a brilliant defensive play in this one as the Mets try to blow it open. And the next one. Swing and a drive. Left center field. There's nobody out there. That's going to roll all the way to the fence. Terminator towards third. They're going to wave him in. Here's Kit towards third. They're going to send him. Here's the throw. Relay to the plate. And Kit goes over. the $6 million man flat out ran him over, and the $6 million man is down. Oh, the humanity. The $6 million man is not getting up, and Kit just left tire marks on him. Oh, and in the crowd, Oscar Goldman is weeping, and they are going to have to find some investors to help put the $6 million man back together.
So, Mike, part two on the national show. We've got a new bit coming up on the national show to start, but I think we should just – Roy thinks that is part two, right, Roy?
That was part two.
Yeah, that was part two. That second half was part two.
Yeah,
no
part
wonder it didn't make sense. We went out of order?
Yeah, we did.
No, it was part one and two. Trust me, there was plenty.
We will get to part one at some point during the national show.
Yes!
What, Mike? What?
We played part one and two. That's why it was nine minutes long.